Attention Crossrim shoppers. The store is now closed. If you were unable to make your final purchases and grab a Crossrim, Deep Peaks, or Hug a Reitman shirt, we've got you covered. Just drop us a direct message and a representative from our staff will be happy to accommodate your needs. Thank you for shopping the Paranormal Shop and have a nice afterlife.
Greetings, programs, and welcome to the Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossrip Podcast. This week on the show, we're going to be talking about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire's bonus features. That's right, it is available video on demand, VOD. We're going to be talking about all of the bonus features and deleted scenes and what we thought maybe some of those deleted scenes might have benefited from being in the film, and some of them are probably best left on the cutting room floor. Stay tuned.
Still Playing with Toys presents the Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossrip, the biggest podcast since 1909.
So great!
News, interviews, and commentary on everything Ghostbusters.
Are you the key master?
Here are your hosts, Troy Benjamin and Chris Stewart.
Weird name. Gotta make the best of that.
You know, it's just occurred to me, we really haven't had a completely successful test of this equipment.
Hair and slime mold and soap scum. Lovely.
Yeah. Blah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Crossrip. We're here talking about rooting your pipes, keeping them clean. You don't want that soap scum and all that gnarly funk in your drains. Clean those things.
Welcome to the Domestic Nerds Podcast.
This old firehouse. With
this old firehouse.
Two guys talking about snake rooters.
Snake rooters.
No, so we missed last week.
What we did. It was a break. This is a good time to reinforce what we talked about earlier in the year, which was we're back, but we weren't going to necessarily force the issue. What I mean? So.
Where we would get burned out on the grind of like, oh my God, it's been a really super busy week or, traveling or whatever's going on. And then we would try to scrape up a podcast. It's just better for us, better for the product if we have something to talk about and if we're not scraping for it. If we're not, the U at the bottom of the little trap in your sink, if you're not trying to, keep that going. So last week it was pretty busy for me, and I pulled the eject cord on poor Chris, and I was like, I can't do it this week. But
yeah, I assumed had we met, you would have told me about your new book that's out.
Yes, this is true.
I love that. Did you ever mention that, or was that kind of quiet in the background? I can't remember.
I think I mentioned it. I don't know. Everything is the problem with things being so secret is like you don't remember.
You don't remember what you've talked about.
I'm of the mindset where I just don't tell anybody anything because it's probably easier that way so that I don't mess up and tell somebody something I'm not supposed to. But
I get it.
Then
I'm of the age too where I'm like, you could have flat out looked me in the eye and told me 15 times and maybe I forgot. I don't know.
You're quoted in the book, Chris. I don't know if you know, but no.
Oh, am I?
No, you're not. I'm just kidding. But yeah.
I love it. I'm going to give you a shout out right now. Let's not wait for the final thoughts. No. So technically, what's it called? Marvel's?
It is called, it's another long-winded, loquacious Marvel title as they are off to do. It is Marvel's Great Responsibility, How to Raise Your Little Hero from, or no, sorry, Raising Your Little Hero from Toddler to Teen.
Right.
Basically, How to Parent the Marvel Way, but they didn't want us to call it How to Parent the Marvel Way because we're moving past
which
that.
Which they should have called it, but anyways.
But yeah, so if you're a parent, it's a book about... It's like my co-author, Jen Fujikawa, who is an amazing... she did the Ghostbusters cookbook, for those of you that are cookbook. Keeping the score. And I wrote this in two very different stages of parenthood. I having had a newborn that I was writing the book while dealing with, and... Jen dealing with sending her kids out to college at the same time, and so it's a very it's funny. It's not like a parenting book where you're gonna not want to read it. It's a very humorous look at parenting through the lens of Marvel comics. Taking a look at parents like Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Jessica Drew and her baby and things like that, and just seeing the challenges that they face as superheroes and comparing them to the challenges you will face as a mortal. But anyway, so yeah, so check it out. It's available on Amazon now. It's available anywhere.
I recommend it. Like I said, I've only so far gone through the sampler bit. Nabbed myself a copy just because I figure, you know, I got a on the doorstep a 12-year-old here, 12 going on 18. So I figure I at least the last half of the book.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there for dealing with the moody teenagers and dealing with the moody teenagers who just happen to have mutant powers at the same time.
Yeah, mine does.
But yeah, so
mostly staying up late, but other than that, you
know. There's nothing you can do. About. There is something in there about sleep spells and how much you want to use them on your kids. And but
don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
That's the easy way out. All right. So there it is. There's my plug for the. Thanks, Chris.
It's my plug for you. I am legitimately chuffed about finding. Was delightful when I stumbled into your post there on social media. I was giddy.
That's man. So cool. Yeah, that was a fun one, and it was definitely outside of our wheelhouses because Jen usually does cookbooks and humor books and. I usually do these big reference goofy things, and this was something totally different. It was kind of tough.
It was it's a reference book for kids.
For kids. For having kids. For kids.
Yeah. I read the sample, and I find it's probably going to bring me up to – it's going to be part of my osmosis level of Marvel readership. I do not read all the titles. I do not read regularly. And I read the little sampler and it's like Spider-Woman having a baby. And I'm like, Spider-Woman's got a kid. All right. I'm up to speed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Some of those are great stories. And that I think will also inspire people to go read stuff that you're not aware of. Those Spider-Woman issues where she's trying to find a sitter because she just needs to go blow off some steam and save the day, or what happens when she's with the other Spider Gwen and Gwen Stacy in another universe in a different multiverse dimension, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but, I noticed they went with other Jessica Drew and Power Man.
Yes, yeah,
they're in there. I did read pretty much everything to do up to. That's not true. I did fall away for a while. And we'll get to the Ghostbusters. I swear to gosh, kids. But I was delighted with the Gang Wars. I stumbled into the Gang Wars series they got going on now. That's all the New York. I guess Marvel's mostly New York anyways, but Spider-Man and all that. And I found out Luke Cage is now mayor. And it's just weird. Again, catch it up. But I was delighted because the back of the book had the checklist. I missed the event comics that they put that cool 80s, 90s checklist in the back. And I was like, thank you. And then I got mad immediately because I found out halfway through that they decided they wanted to jam Mary Jane Watson's new book into the series. And they changed the list halfway through. And I'm like, you can't do that. You're supposed to have it worked out in advance, you guys. Oh. Anyways. So thanks for tuning in to Domestic Nerds.
Domestic Nerds, Plumbing, and Marvel Comics Talk.
Marvel Comics Talk.
Well, let's get into the Ghostbusters talk. How about
that Deadpool Wolverine?
I can tell by the bass thumping from my neighbors below that it is time to get into the Ghostbusters talk.
Party started.
Hey, get that party started. Apartment life, everybody. Yes, we're here to talk about the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire digital release, which just hit, I guess it's going to be a week ago as you're listening to this, last Tuesday.
Within 24 hours for us as of recording. Yeah,
so we've been able to dive in and watch some of the features, haven't made it through the entirety of the commentary, which is fantastic.
Nope.
Gil Kenan's got a great feature-length commentary, but there are some meaty discussion topics here within, especially the deleted scenes, honestly. Like, there are a couple deleted scenes that I'm like, oh man, if that would have been in the film, I don't know how much it would have changed of other people's opinions and the criticisms that people had of it. But for me, certainly it was the little breaths of things that I needed to see. Right there at the top of the list was, I think I remember vividly when you and I were talking about our thoughts on Frozen Empire. I was like, if I just needed one shot of Lars, like slimed and out cold or something, and I would have been,
they had it.
There it was. It's in the deleted
scenes.
somebody was listening to me.
They were.
but yeah, so I don't, do you want to start? Let's start with the deleted scenes, Chris. I feel like that's
sure.
That's
well, actually, good. Yeah, let's the deleted scenes are, immediately I sat Thomas down and I said, "Look what I got." And he would click 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 deleted scenes. Yay. I was like, "You don't want to watch the electronic press kit stuff?" Nope. I'm like, "Okay, we'll watch the deleted scenes." I will say, and this is in the lead up to it, in the days leading up to it, to the last box office reports coming in, movies done fairly well, and then I instantly get mad at the world because they keep trying to compare apples and oranges. It's like, oh, you know, the 2016 did better. I was like, no, pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, streaming, no, stop comparing the box offices of the different movies. You can't do it. But what I for perspective, was very surprised to realize that we now live in the world where movies, some of them, like, I don't even remember the Planet of the Apes movie coming and going, and it's already poised to, they're already advertising it for pre-order for digital and all that. But Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, 45 days?
I think that's about 45 days. Yeah, but and yeah, that's actually, like that. It's a little bit longer than Dune because Dune's been out on digital. I think you and I were talking a few weeks ago where yeah. I was like, Dune just came out, so Frozen Empire's got to be close.
Dune, yeah, exactly. Dune, I think, you know, cut bait even a little sooner on the digital. It's fast. It's a super fast turnaround. And I went looking for older movies. I think Paul over at Ghostbusters.net Paul? Chad?
Chad. Oh, Chad. Yeah, Chad on Ghostbusters.net. Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know why I pivoted. Paul. Sorry, Chad. I'm sorry. The trouble is he doesn't attach his name to his post much, so he's slowly morphing to Ghostbusters.net in the filing system of my brain.
And he doesn't exist as a real person. Yeah.
And he's not a real person. I haven't physically hung out with that guy in a measure of decades now. I'm going to have to catch up on that. That's, but anyways, I pointed out from my video store clerk days that how long it took for Terminator 2 to leave the theaters. And it was 100 some odd days to and end up for 100 some odd days for rental. And then a better part of a year before you could buy your own copy, which wasn't even, and then he pointed out Ghostbusters was like 400. It was 400 days before you could even just go out and rent it. And that was the time period where they didn't even sell it to you. You either waited for a used copy to be dumped by a store, or you knew the people at the store and said, I would like to buy one of your copies, like through your distributors. And they're like, that'll be $80 to $120 in 1980s money, right? Like, it was just crazy. So I was just kind of marveling, like, heading into this thing. It's like, man. Like, it literally feels like yesterday, because it was basically yesterday that we went to the theaters, we saw this thing. Round of applause to those of you that, I don't know what the record topped out at. I think I saw somebody that said they were going for their 10th time, and I think that's not even the highest.
I saw it was like their 23rd time on social media. Wow. Yeah, and that was the day that the film came out on digital, and they said, I could watch it at home, or I could watch it in the theaters one more time.
Anyways, yeah. But yeah, it was a real quick turnaround, and now we got the packages dropped everywhere. You grabbed, what, Prime? I grabbed Apple. Basically the same.
I did. I bought Apple because when you buy on Apple, it goes Apple? To the movies anywhere, and then I can watch it on Prime or
that's true.
Wherever I need to watch it.
Okay, yeah. There you go. So deleted scenes.
Yeah.
Where do you want to?
I guess let's just start at the top of the list. So on the top of my list right now, I've got headlines, which is the deleted scene with Trevor walking up into the attic, and it's not really too much more of the scene aside from, you know, he sort of stumbles when he walks through the however you walk through the hole cut in the attic to get into
climbed into the attic. Yeah.
And he finds a Time magazine with his grandfather on it, and, you know, and stares at it. It kind of makes that connection to, you know, hey, that's Egon Spengler. And I think we even saw that shot in one of the trailers, too, of, you know, these are the descendants of Egon Spengler. And that's really all that scene adds. It's that one little shot of seeing Egon in the Time magazine. That one I can understand. Look, you're cut for time, whatever. We got to get a minute or two out of this movie.
Yeah.
No big
deal.
It
did make me realize that the movie didn't really talk about Egon too much. It's mentioned like the family of, you know, famed Ghostbuster, you know, but that was it.
That was
like
it. Yeah, that exposition dump of news stuff that's in the TV at the very beginning. Yeah,
it feels like maybe they decided that since it wasn't really a running theme. Except I'm an advocate of if you have linked movies, like if you have an extended story over multiple movies, you know, sometimes it doesn't have to have a running arc or anything in a movie. You can just do a little nod and it. And I think that would have been kind of nice, you know, just again, and this goes back to what you and I talked about, Trevor didn't really grapple with the idea of a grandpa that he didn't really know about and then is dealing with the fact that he never will because he's passed away, but whereas Phoebe, as a slightly more front-facing character, had way more time with Egon. So to have him crawl up, and it was so short, like it literally saved them 15 seconds. I was like, I don't know. I think you probably could have like eaten that 15 seconds on the end runtime if you had to. And it would have been kind of nice just to have a little Trevor introspection, like implied, and then move on.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know.
I feel like that what became abundantly clear from these deleted scenes is that there was a lot more for Trevor in what was written and what was filmed that we just didn't get to see. Cause yeah. There were a few, you know, like Trevor was underserved. Lucky was a little underserved. Podcast was, the cast was so huge. The ensemble was so huge that things had to be pared back. And like, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but there's the rooftop consolation deleted scene that's the one that I saw. And I was like, oh my good. If this was in the film, like it's just a sweet moment between Lucky and Trevor. And it's Trevor kind of grappling with what you were just talking about. Like, everybody has a role here, but what the hell am I? Like, what do I do? I don't understand my place in this. And it's not just my place in the family, but it's my place as a Ghostbuster. Like, everybody's got their expertise, and I'm kind of this outcast outlier. Good stuff, because then it really fulfills at the very end when the keys get thrown to him and he's so hyped up because suddenly he's become like the driver. He's the person that's going to be able to hot rod through New York City. That's where Lucky points him toward. You're a great driver. Oh, yeah, that's right. I really want to drive the car. Like, and it's a rudimentary, such a very simple thing to have a character that just wants to drive the car and gets to drive the car. But with this context, it's not quite as rudimentary anymore. It's not quite as simple because it's like he's finding he's going to be the guy driving the car. Gruberson doesn't need to drive the car anymore. That's my job. So anyway, I skipped ahead there. But yeah, I think like Trevor, even that little 15 seconds of Trevor sitting, it just goes back to I wanted the movie to breathe a little bit more. Like he goes up to the attic. Let's spend some time in that attic for just 1 second longer before you know, the slime.
I had a thought, and this you've kind of set it up for me to remembering it and all that. It does now explain a lot about why the first Ghostbusters worked, and I guess to a lesser degree the second one worked when they shouldn't have. Like, because we've talked before about, you know, there are rules to filmmaking that are generally followed, like, you know, formulas and things you have to do and all that. And one of them is characters have to, you know, grow and expand and have and Ghostbusters had none of that. And it's like, oh, as we sit here watching, you know, 8+ people run around and we're not getting enough time to really get into them, we suddenly realize why Ghostbusters worked. Because right now, if you imagine the next movie, oh, well, Trevor's kind of been, you know, maybe it's time to look at Trevor a bit more in the next movie. Well, what happens to the rest of them? Do they get pushed back a little bit? It's like, can there be time for everybody in a single movie? Or is it just, well, that's why it works so well in Ghostbusters, because guess what? We didn't have to spend any time on any of that.
Yeah, like, it's the old...
We just went for the... Yeah.
Marty McFly in Back to the Future or Ferris Bueller are not changed characters. They're the same character that they were at the beginning of the movie that they're at the end of the movie. Maybe a little wiser.
You have to introduce The archetype, you just let people know what archetype they are and then get out of the way and let it, off it goes. And now we live more in an era where people do expect, you know, or are way more critical when movies do, you know, we still live in a world where people poo-poo action movies, and that's one of the main tropes of action movies is, no, here's your guy, here's his motivation, off he goes, like, that's it, goodbye, like... But it works to its favor because guess what you got to do in an action movie? You got to spend 2/3 of it blowing things up and fighting. That's not a lot of room for storytelling, kids.
Yeah, where's your character arc there? Yeah.
So, but two movies with the new Spenglers, and we know the original OGs, like we know what they... So we might, and again, this goes back to the deleted, well, not the deleted scenes, but some of the cutscenes and the featurettes that we'll get to there. Where a couple of times it was mentioned, right, by the actors and all that, oh, you know, Patton's the librarian occult guy, and then if you need a wacky scientist, we wanted James Acaster. It's like, they're kind of, we've gone through the deeper character stuff with the Spengler family. Every movie from now on, maybe we can just kind of lean on the, here's the character, and off they go. Like, we don't have to. Anyways, that was just a thought I had because it harkened back to some of our earlier episodes here in the last couple of months.
Yeah, and I feel like...
Talking about this movie.
It's there are other scenes, I'm skipping over I Am a Doctor, Venkman, I really want to come back to that, but there are other scenes like Ghost Chopper that you see here where they really worked hard to bring the whole ensemble together as best as they possibly could.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, you've got... Janine, there's such a great joke in Ghost Chopper of, we don't have a plan, you know, there's such meaty moments for the characters that you don't get quite as much time for in the actual theatrical cut of the film, but just having everybody standing around the kitchen and having this dialogue scene, I think, you know, really helps. Like, even just seeing Hubert there in the firehouse, which
it brought Patton way more into this idea that he is going to continue into the following movies. He is part of the new dynamic.
And it worked so, because the rapport between Kumail and Patton was so great in that scene too. So those are the things that you kind of missed out on, that, you know, again, this, like, to serve the ensemble cast, like kind of bringing everybody together and having this big sort of conference, I think would have helped quite a bit. And again, would have been a nice moment to breathe. But mm-hmm. let's go back to I Am a Doctor. So this now, in the feature that was released, your introduction to Dr. Peter Venkman is not until after they've met Nadim and they sit him down to do the test with the colander on, and you know, a great scene, and it's a great introduction to Peter Venkman. This scene, which we've seen photos of Gruberson and Venkman down by the containment unit, I've been very curious, and we saw that little snippet, and I think it was like a TV spot that said, I would have shaved, showered, and hit the clubs, you know, like that trademark Venkman joke was in one of the TV spots. But how do you feel about this scene? If this would have been your introduction to Venkman in the film, do you feel that this would have had the same impact that seeing him running the psychological test would have? Or would this have helped or diminished? How do you feel?
Diminished.
Yeah.
I'll just, it's an easy throw, I think, because the difference between this and the way they actually incorporate him in the movie is, this is him jokingly or otherwise playing up the idea of, I'm just here. I went partying. What he's the, whatever you want to call it, the useless wheel or whatever, right? Like, which he's not necessarily in the scheme of things, but it really kind of played up the idea that he's just dilettanting through. Even after Ghostbusters has been established and all that, he's just sort of swanning his way through this thing. Whereas the way we saw him, he showed up and, you know, no matter how much he kind of leaned on the other two to get through his exams and dissertations, he's a doctor of psychology and he came in and was contributing to the research and all that. And so That and the other thing I noticed in this one is the scene. I don't know how many times they did this scene, but this one you could feel the slightly awkward improv-y, right? Like Bill and Paul.
Oh, interesting. So it felt kinda awkward. The improv felt awkward to you? That's interesting.
There's a line in the actually it's bookended great, and then there's a bit where Peter or Bill does kind of, I'd have to rewatch it now, but he does kind of and Paul kind of does the improv-y, you know, like they end up kind of semi-stepping on one another in a, you know, stepping on one another in dialogue has to be kind of done right to feel right. Otherwise it feels accidental, which is what it is. And then accidental feels awkward. Like, you know, it had not been planned and the two of them were just, you know, the good takes are when it vibes, and it's when it doesn't, it kind of feels weird. So I don't know how many takes they had, but this was good stuff. And then there's kind of this weird little badoink hiccup in the middle of it that I just kind of went, but no, that's neither here nor there. I only bring that up because I know a lot of people are like, that would have been great in the movie. I was like, I don't know that it would have, for various reasons. And that's one of them. But the main one is, as funny as it is for him to go, the three of them would have went off to do useful stuff, and I went partying. And I was like, yeah,
we get that. And there was a certain sense of like, why the hell did they call Venkman to look at that? Like, maybe that's what the scene was intended to be, is like, why did you call me? Like, I have no expertise in this whatsoever. You should have called Ray. You should have called Winston's engineers or something. Like, what am I doing here?
When you ultimately needed him to be competent, the movie and story needs him to be competent, the thing you can cut out of the movie is the bit where he jokes about not being competent. You can't cut the bit where he is competent. You need it,
So you need him to show up to save the day, and the counterpoint though too is, it's the only scene that you have between Paul Rudd and Bill Murray, arguably your two biggest headlining stars in the film. So I get why it was filmed. I get why it was staged this way. I get that the two of them were going to have this sort of conversation. The bummer is that they couldn't find a way to squeeze it in somewhere else at some other point. Or when Gruberson is struggling with his fallout with Phoebe, and right before he goes up to the door and has that beautiful conversation with Phoebe, who is not there, you know, maybe that could have been some sort of, or in the reshoots, maybe they could have found a way to smooth that out. But,
I mean, going back to the, all of them in the kitchen thing, there's a lot of, it works without it, but this one waits a little different than the ones in the kitchen. The one in the kitchen was something we never talked about much, is that whole bit of where Nadim is clearly way more versed and was listening to his grandmother way more than comes across in the movie as it is now.
The bedtime stories about the mountains of bodies and the rivers of blood.
The rivers of blood and all that, right?
Oh, so and good.
I kind of, that is example, that one bit there, I was like, oh man, that would have made him feel a little less like the flake who rises to the occasion. Like, I like flakes that rise to the occasion when the rising to the occasion is a ramp rather than a sudden jump.
Yeah, there's a little build up to it.
A little buildup that would have helped with it being a bit more of a buildup rather than the can't bend a candle. I'm moving proton streams around. I was like, that's a big jump there, buddy. Good for you. But that
other deleted scene, the headlines deleted scene where we see Garaka going to kill the other Firemaster, and he realizes that that's near his apartment. And then he says
that.
Like, I'm gonna go study or I'm gonna go practice or whatever he says there. Like, again, like that would have helped with your ramp where it's like stakes just keep rising on you and you gotta get there.
We've never talked about this, but the killing of the vape store guy called Firemaster is actually one of the things that upon reflection really bugged me about the movie. I kind of, even after first seeing it, I watched it and I came out and I went, like it felt so much like Garak, who was like, I am back. Bring me a yellow pages. And it's like stealing somebody's phone to flip through.
Have you seen this boy? Oh,
yeah.
My God, there's like 12 fire masters in this burrow alone. What the... like this one bit where, again, it explained that the store guy was close to where he lived. I was like,
yeah, that, okay. That does help a little bit.
At least gave some little...
It's still such an 80s, going back to Terminator, it's still such an 80s trope, yeah. But yeah. There's one other thing that I realized that I wanted to mention, and this is maybe a little bonus treat for the people that have stuck with us for 30 minutes here. In the Ghost Chopper... deleted scene when they're talking about why don't we just move the containment unit? Why don't, if we've been building an army for Garaka for 40 years, why don't we just pack that thing up and move it to somewhere else so that he doesn't know where it is? Not only is a great plot point, but then they mentioned the Ghost Chopper. You know, I think that's a great idea. We should have a chopper with the logo on the side and stuff like that. That's such a real Ghostbusters thing too. But for the people that bought the Spangler pack from HasLab, if you read through that technical manual that they gave to you with the pack, there was a mobile containment unit that Egon Spengler had designed to transfer the containment unit to an offsite location. And it looked like a big garbage truck, like kind of a two times size garbage truck. And I know that that's something that they had even toyed with for the original films.
Those appeared in the original Hellbent script.
Hellbent. That was the other thing. It was like these giant, like, because ghosts were running rampant, that you had like basically your waste management services that were carting around ghosts. And so again, just that little bit of lore, that little bit of something. It was also another thing for Finn Wolfhard to do as Trevor that I wish would have been in there. But that connection I saw immediately when I was watching that deleted scene and thought, how cool would that have been?
The featurette about returning to the headquarters, like right out of the gate, Gil Kenan says the fire hall is a character in the movie. And I hate to say it, that containment unit is the heart of that character. You empty it out and put them elsewhere, it's just a fire hall where they live, right? Like it kind of diminishes what it is and what it's there for. Once you take them out, it's like, you know, this is some prime real estate. Well, let's just sell it and set up out, you know, across one of the bridges or something where it's cheaper.
But maybe,
so I don't know. Yeah.
And this is just me speculating, but maybe the Ghost Chopper scene may have been principal photography, and then maybe the scene where they explain in the actual film that the firehouse is like the gum on the dam holding in the water. That might have been a reshoot. So maybe that was so that they were giving a reason to why they were locking down, because you can also get that sense of like, why don't we just leave? We can't leave. We're the Ghostbusters. This is our home. This is our headquarters. We don't just leave. We don't just flee. We stand and we fight. They kept kind of coming back to that. So that there was a reason that all of this stuff was taking place in the firehouse. Ghost Chopper, again, one of those ones that I kind of wish was in the film, to be honest. I think you and I are agreed with I Am a Doctor. Like, as much of a great scene between two amazing comedians as it is, I think it underserved Venkman, and you get a better introduction to him later. It's a better surprise to see him throwing pens at Kumail later in the movie, too.
Yeah. That's the fun part. Because actually, weirdly, we talked about this before, the pen-throwing thing mixes the bad scientist, but actually is a good Ghostbuster. That weird mix of Peter Venkman.
Poor scientist who's come to a scientific conclusion or a hypothesis that if I do this, it will annoy him and he will something will emerge. I think that worked better for Venkman. Even though I love the scene. It's a lovely scene, and I would want to see. They need to make another movie so that I can get more Bill Murray and Paul Rudd talking to each other in literally anything. Put them down at Monk's restaurant for all I care, eating pastrami. I just want to see those two characters talking to each other. But yeah, so I think that rounds out the deleted scenes with the exception of Slime Bath, which we already talked about. That was the one that I saw that and I was like, somebody somewhere was like, this is for you, Troy, just so you know that Lars was incapacitated and so slime that he couldn't get up from from the ground.
It wasn't sloppy over. It's always nice that it's confirmed that it's, I mean, you suspected it wasn't sloppy oversight, that they had to cut down on some time.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have it confirmed that, no, we were thinking exactly along those lines. We just had to.
Eh. It's also possible that this one is on the digital release and on the Blu-ray disc for James Acaster. When you're watching the behind the scenes and they dump all of the methicil slime on him and he's joking about how it was warm and it was flavorless. And he went through all of that. And then it wasn't in the movie. So that's another kind of like.
There has been a couple of articles. I think they're fishing and guessing, but they're like, this is how the end credit sequence is, you know, going to tie into the next movies. It's like, yeah, I don't know about that, but okay. I would have traded that one a little bit to like go through the credits and then it cuts to Acaster going back to his apartment, covered in slime, kind of peeling himself out of his clothes, making a cup of tea, just padding around. Because that's the classic post-Ghostbuster thing, right? You did a job, you're a mess, and then you got to go home and unwind,
gross,
right?
Gross and ick, yeah.
Just padding around in his boxer shorts and t-shirts and socks, all of it still kind of partially slimed and just sort of trying to shake off the day. I was like, that would have been a great end credit sequence. And then he turned to look at the camera and says, this one's for you, Troy Benjamin.
This is
they
for
didn't
that,
forget about
that
me, Troy Benjamin.
Loudmouth with a podcast. there's one more thing before we move on from the deleted scenes. Mm-hmm. In the not headlines, in the news report deleted scene.
News report, yeah.
I'm sure everybody noticed it. I just want to point it out so that we look like good podcasting hosts. The reporter's name is Blutarski. Which would have been just one more Easter egg in there for all of us to be pouring over and talking.
Is that
about
a good segue to the Easter egg?
Yeah, let's do that because there's some really good stuff in the Easter eggs.
There's a few in there. I like a couple in there that I went, oh yeah, I didn't even notice
So what were some of the big revelatory big word, tough word?
In a movie where the trailers and the released images showed more nods back to Ghostbusters 2 than the final movie did, there was a couple of good Ghostbusters 2 references in there. Like, I was in there looking for things like the sticker on the box and all that in the attic and all that. I'm like, oh, it's not there. Oh, that sucks. They put it in it's definition of fan service. They put it out there and then they took it away. And then in grumping about that, I completely missed the Ray's safety helmet and his GB2 charcoal suit in the
locker.
His locker. Briefly you see the logo. I was like, oh. So there you go, everybody. Ghostbusters 2 is 100% canon. It was just weird. It was a weird marketing turn that the company did in 1988.
It makes sense that Venkman would have come up with like a, we're back, it's our second go around, Ghostbusters 2.0. The little things, the thing that I've really latched on to, and for the reasons that I adore what Jason and Gil do with Ghostbusters, is in the commentary he mentions it. I can't remember if it's in the Easter eggs featurette or not, but like when the Ecto plows into all of those rental e-bikes and they're all Manhattan City Bank, City National Bank, it's the bank that the Ghostbusters got their loan from, you know, all those little things.
Yeah, I didn't notice that one.
I think it's the one right out of the gate that when the possessed Ecto crashes into the files in Venkman's office, the way that the papers blow out of the drawers, it was very important to them that it looked and felt like the card catalog bursting into the air. You know, those little sort of, it's that attention to detail. It's that type of thing that you're not just kind of glossing over like, oh, Ghostbusters movie, whatever, I don't care. Like, whatever that looks like, I don't give it, you know, whatever. That type of stuff, I really latched on to. I'm trying to think, there was another one. I mean, obviously, Cannibal Girls, like that one was called out.
That one was called out. It was nice, too, that they kind of, when it was a multiply reoccurring Easter egg, they brought those together. So being able to show Lewis Podcast and Nadim all wearing the colander sensor on their head. I was like, that's kind of nice, right?
Like, and then there were all the little things, like they even go so far as to show in like photographs in the backgrounds of stuff. Like there's the Muncher stop sign. There was that one. You know, nothing crazy huge. But I really appreciate when they do these Easter egg ones. And then they call out for the people who don't recognize. Oh man, Michael Tanaka is going to hit me. Why can't I think of the librarian at the New York Public Library? His,
I can't remember his name right now either, but I know he'd, is it another Michael?
Alicort. Oh geez. I'm so sorry. Between my brain being mush, between working on a project that I can't talk about for way too many hours and the constant thumping of my neighbor's bass downstairs, I can't think of anything. It'll come. So
John Rothman?
In real life.
Is that him?
Yeah.
Oh, in real name.
No, that was
his. Oh, that's his character name?
Wasn't it? Oh, my goodness.
It's been... Yeah, John Rothman. Library administrator. I don't know the characters. Yeah, I haven't found the character's name yet, but the actor is John Rothman.
Anyway, I know he has a name.
Anyway.
So the Easter Eggs Unleashed is a great feature. The ghosts feature is also great. There's a lot of really great behind the scenes of the librarian ghost, seeing that sculpt and seeing how the puppet worked. Very similar.
Yeah.
To the original Ghostbusters,
it was interesting to again, I hate living in a post Cinefex world, but
I know
that they digitally removed her from the original movie so it's literally her doing the exact same shh thing from the original.
And then they built themselves
a puppet for the transformation thing. I'm like, oh, that's really great. I will say, it might not be tonight, but it might be this weekend. In the Easter egg thing, they have a quick cut between Ray and Winston in the containment unit basement, and then the new movie. I'm gonna eyeball the hell out of that because I still think the new set is slightly bigger than the original basement. So
it is possible.
Unrelated to the whole thing, however, the one thing I realized, because they used it in a bunch of shots that I guess were regarded as safe shots that they reused over and over, and one of them is the mini puffs slamming against the windows. That Sony has not given somebody the go ahead to make little window clings of those smushed semi-zombie safe for us to stick on our car windows, like
begging for it. Like, yeah.
If they don't make it, now that I got a big digital copy of the movie, I'm gonna print my own if you don't do something about it.
I've got a screen grab from, I think even in the trailers, like of the puffs up against the window, and I was like, why don't I have this? I need this. This is
why isn't that on my car?
Yeah. Come on, you guys.
There's a lot of featurettes, actually. I was very surprised by the amount of the featurettes. Let's see here. I'm going back through them here.
Yeah,
I haven't done the commentary.
There's the creation of the firehouse. Like, the return to the firehouse kind of acts as, like, building the firehouse set. It uses some of the stuff from the Adam Savage firehouse tour with Jason Reitman. But then it also acts as, like, an introduction to the new characters, and there's tons and tons and tons of great behind-the-scenes B-roll stuff in there.
It's framed around the it's basically the main one. Yeah, I interrupted you, unfortunately, and you were talking about the Ghosts one.
The Ghosts really one is really great. They talk about where the sewer ghost came from, you know, that they wanted to make it look like the subway ghost. Phosphor. Because it's going so fast. It's like a 8-minute featurette. They can't really go too in depth on stuff. But they also talk about Slimer, and they talk about how Arian sort of ceremonially ground up some of the original foam from the Slimer puppet that was in existence and mixed it in so that literally the DNA of Slimer would be in the foam latex rubber.
Homeopathic puppetry, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, you need a little essence of the original in there.
Garaka, they busted out into his own segment, which was great. That one was fun just because they did go through him feature by feature.
Yeah.
You know, talking about like cold breath, you can't see breath. So we went with Blizzard and stuff like that. Like they really kind of dived into how they kind of, again, it's something that we would have taken for granted in a world with Cinefex and all that, or a feature that is specifically about the special effects. Maybe something we'll see on physical editions. Possibly that'd be nice, but they touch on it in all these ones when they get to the ghosts and all that about how, because they mentioned it with in the ghosts one about the sewer dragon. She kind of it's in passing because again it is light, it's short, so it's moving lightning quick sort of thing. But the effects supervisor mentioned like getting that balance of how to design a translucent blue ghost to fly around and up into the sky in the daytime and you can still see it, right? Like,
yeah. The translucency, that seemed like, like with Melody too, they talked quite a bit about that too, is trying to figure out how transparent she was. Yeah.
Again, so fast. Like, actually, that's my biggest complaint about some of these featurettes is they touch on something and then they've immediately moved on and I have questions. So like the bit with Melody, they show a quick shot, which again gives me hope that there is an effects feature that we're going to see eventually. They show a quick shot of all the different fire effect masks that they created for her to give her that effect. Like it was, I think, it was the clean shot of her because she was physically present in the scene with McKenna, and then four frames of different parts of the fire effect. And I'm looking at it going, yes, more of that, please. No, we moved on.
And okay. Even just that they gave the VFX artists reference of like they found a way to get the blue flames, and I forget what the exact mixture was that they poured onto the mannequin in order to film it, but don't try it at home, obviously.
No.
Those tiny details are fantastic.
Was it like a Sterno variant or something?
It was
burns blue.
It was like lighter fluid and something they said, I can't recall.
Stop listening now, kids. Don't think about it. Don't.
If you want to make blue flames, get a, you know, go do study. Go become a pyro technician somewhere and study how to do it. But
there you go.
So yeah, so lots and lots of great behind the scenes featurettes. The one that is near and dear to my heart, just because I was there for it.
I know
was
which one.
The scoring session one. And
my two favorite, and not to, you can have the score. What score for me was big. I went down a DX7 K-hole on YouTube after watching that thing. Like I disappeared into so many YouTube documentaries.
Did you purchase about the one? DX7. That is the, yeah.
No, Troy. No, I didn't. But I will admit that I did go looking on eBay to see how much they were selling for.
They're not cheap at all.
And I think if I went looking, I found one guy who bought one, and was going through the carts that came with it. And he found the particular two bells one that is used in the thing. I was like, oh man, that is. And then, of course, immediately went to, I want to do that in the comfort of my own home. It's like, that seems like an expensive purchase just so you can play one song once and then forget about it. I think the music is a great one to get into. In passing, I do want to say my second favorite was the Paranormal Discovery Center.
Oh yeah, well, we didn't even talk about that one either. Yeah,
that was my favorite because we talked about it. Like, what a great idea to have this lab. How did they pick it? Where did they pick it? Why is there an empty aquarium? Sort of, and it is kind of invented from whole cloth.
Yeah,
they were inspired by, what do they say, one in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then they sent that off for inspiration, and then they found one in was it Queens or something? They said they found an old abandoned, and it was probably like a power station by the looks of it or something, but it had that round early century red brick building design and all that. And so they just went great. So they made, you know, designed rounded interiors and aquatic colored tiles with the fish tiles coming out. And what are the ghosts in? They're tanks. Those are aquarium tanks that, you know, you never really think about until you're like, oh yeah, that's, yeah.
It's you, already you there. You just retrofit and it and you're good to go.
That'd be great. I really love that. I would love to, again, to see more. I'm hoping that, the same level of design work that kind of went into recreating the fire hall was done for the Paranormal Research Lab. And we'll get to see that, like, just in terms of CAD design and stuff. But well, anyways, music that they left the best for last. Watching that one was, really, really great. And it kind of, answered a lot of questions we had, you and I, when we were talking about when the soundtrack came out. You know, where was his Dario's headspace at in having to make music for a whole new movie, but having to touch on the themes from a previous movie? And just right out the gate, he was just like, no, Elmer Bernstein's great. The themes he had was great. And it was great to take them and rework them and incorporate them. And good. We're all happy now. So,
yeah. And particularly the scoring. So like there are so many things that happened in that scoring session, that I think that they covered the ground so well in the short amount of time that, you know, we really worked hard to make that one a diary of like, here's it, we're in the moment, we're interviewing Gil, we're interviewing Dario, we're getting their thoughts right there on the fly. And, but yeah, I mean, there were other things too, like that particular DX7, was not, I don't believe it was the original that was used on the Ghostbuster score. I mean, it was the same model, obviously. It was one that was owned by Peter Bernstein. And I guess that they had pulled it out of his storage and it needed repairs. Like they went to fire it up and it didn't turn on and they were like, uh-oh. So they had to send it to the one person who can actually work on those synthesizers and make it work. So little things like that. And even just like, for me, and it was really tough to capture it, but the minute that they did get that Yamaha set up and as soon as Peter started just kind of noodling around with it, like you said, like you hear those bells, you hear the chimes, you hear the synthesizer, and it's immediately Ghostbusters. But he set up and they did that little tone that you hear on the Ghost Corps logo, on the Columbia logo in the original film, just that one bong. And in scoring sessions, everybody works so hard to be quiet because you don't want to mess up because the mics are so sensitive. You don't want to mess anything up. So he hits that one note and there's like, you can two breaths and then you hear everybody just sort of giddily go, it was the thing. He did the thing. That was the thing from the thing with the thing. And even out in the record, you could hear in the control booth, everybody just kind of like, getting all tittering about it. That was so funny.
But like all the rest, it just brought up a lot of questions. That's partly why I ended up down this YouTube journey looking into the DX7, just realizing how much of 80s pop music had a DX7 in it was a big thing. And then realizing, like, going back and listening to the original scoring and realizing where the DX7 shows up. So, because for all the stuff, like in the shorts, the thing they brought it in for and they played, and you're like, oh yeah, that's great. And then I went and watched, and like I said, that one guy was walking through the sample step by step and playing with them and all that, and realizing, oh, they use that instrument in the DX7 for, you know, so like
it's everywhere. I mean, you think
everywhere
of that,
throughout the movie,
that first couple of moments of the original Ghostbusters, and they're like, okay, there's no more synth throughout, but no, it's in the entirety of the entire.
I mean, at its best / worst is some of the his super over the top jazzy synth pop that ended up getting cut out, sort
the
of
the Ghostbusters thing, theme that Elmer Bernstein wrote that did not end up in the
did not da, end up da, in there da, da, but da, again da, da, it just makes me now want to listen more carefully to see if I'm not mistaking the DX7 as a piano. I think there's several times throughout the thing where I think I'm listening to a piano and he's playing the DX7's modulated version of a jazzy kind of piano. And I'm like, yeah. And given how much once you realize how much you use throughout the thing, I was like, yeah, he may not have bothered with, like, he's got his full orchestra, but no piano. The piano is just being handled in various ways by this digital instrument he's got. I did run into one guy on YouTube that it was a short called A Useless Waste of Space, and it was just him pressing it going, this is supposed to be a referee's whistle, and it's just, it is really, what a useless waste of space. And by that point, I'm 35 minutes into, you do not realize how powerful the DX7 is, you fool!
Yeah.
It's that one was so great, the choral group they brought in.
That choir was just awesome. And that's something you don't really, that was new to a Ghostbusters score. Yeah. Like having that big and just operatic and huge feeling choir. It was really cool.
And the perfect time to bring it in, because he applied it to the new bad guy. We haven't seen, he didn't try to apply it in a general supernatural badness is happening. He didn't try to apply it in a, you know, incorporating it back into some of the other themes, you know, dark and light or whatever. He saved it specifically for the 3,500-year-old ancient evil.
For evil.
And I'm like,
the choir always means evil. Yeah. So that featurette, I'm so, Mob Scene is the name of the company that cut all the featurettes. And Greg, who's the producer over there, is just, he's a big Ghostbusters fan. And I know that he really pours heart and soul into these. So I'm just pleased with what they did with everything. So check those. If you haven't watched the behind the scenes featurettes, if you like us dove into the deleted scenes first, I totally understand that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But watch all of those and give the commentary a listen and let us know what you thought of everything. Let us know what deleted scenes you thought should have been in there, which ones you're glad weren't in there. We want to hear from you guys on that. And
wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals.
Go Stoppers.
I'm sorry, we'll do it again.
We want to hear from you. Leave us a voicemail on our call-in line at 470-242-4742. That's 4702-GBHQIC. We also have a Facebook page.
You do?
And Twitter accounts.
Trent is dead.
No kidding. Just give me the address.
Search Facebook for
the Ghostbusters
Interdimensional Crossrip.
On Twitter, look for Troy at Ghostbusters HQ and Chris at Proton Charger.
I just want to get back close again.
What the hell are you doing?
If you like what you hear, please take a moment to give us a review on iTunes. Be sure to recommend us to your friends.
That makes good sense. Don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals.
Once again, our call-in line is 4702-GBHQIC.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
Well, Chris, of course, now as we are coming to a close, my neighbors have decided to turn the music down. I've been writing the cough button on my microphone this entire time. I'm so sorry for all of you that have been hearing.
I don't have one of those. I should start using one of those.
I tried the best I could. But what do you have in terms of final thoughts for this here episode?
Well, my final thought is that ever since you said Venkman and Gruberson down in the containment storage... I've been sitting on, you had a point, and I don't like interrupting your points necessarily, unless I'm interrupting it to kind of, you know, we
should
sidestep.
You should.
This would have derailed it entirely. But the minute you said that, I wanted to say Venkman and Gruberson down with the containment unit is my favorite Paul Simon song. and now that song is stuck in your head too. Thanks, everybody.
Venkman and Gruberson down by the container. It's a few too Game many unit. Syllables.
Nah, you can make it work.
But yeah,
you can make it work. I don't really
Gary
have a final
down
thought.
By the containment. We'll get there. I'll workshop it. We'll figure something out. Yeah.
I don't know that I got. I mean, I got my, I found some Empire magazines finally. I was happy about that.
Excellent.
I mean, I have no final thoughts. These are just generally me going, all right, life's good.
Well, what we have to look for, so we've got Ghostbusters Day right around the corner, which I'm assuming will
be 1 month away.
A celebration of the anniversary. We're still sitting in the 40th anniversary, and it's all understandably been about Frozen Empire, but, you know.
It's out of the way now, and what we've seen in the last few, nice save, by the way, pulling Ghostbusters Day. That would be, man, if I was more on the ball, I would have thought of that one as a final thought.
That's really gotcha. Good.
I think we've seen in the last few that Ghostbusters Day is less about things happening and more about things being announced at us. Part of the celebrating the anniversary is all the cool celebratory anniversary stuff that they will then spend the next 6 months rolling out to us.
Yeah. But I'm not expecting a big, like, we're not getting, the next movie's not getting announced in a month. Like, I don't think that's happening.
I don't think so. We have already seen, there's already, you know, information about the upcoming physical releases. So that's not going to be a big thing. Yeah, what would we get? I mean, by that point, we're still only 3/4 of the way through the comic series. Maybe we'll get more on the follow-up.
Yeah, maybe some more. They are going to do another series after that next series. Yeah.
You know what? They're cheap to make, so you know the decision-making turnaround time is very short. To just get in front of, get Dan in front of a camera somewhere and announce that they're going to do a line of Ghostbusters novels. You know what I mean? I'll wait a year. If you want to announce it in a month that there's going to be books, I'll take it. I'll wait.
He can announce it. Somebody should start writing them probably if they, if they haven't already.
But that's my point. If you decide you're going to make books, it, you know, just announce it. And then, you know, whatever it takes, 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be but less than a year and a half. Know, I don't think.
Something to look forward to. Yeah. but yeah,
I think maybe some more information from the next series of comics will probably come out.
Small stuff. Yeah, I think comics is probably stuff. Like on this. Yeah, or maybe some product. Hasbro a few product. Things.
Yeah, you know, statistically, there's a 50-50 chance that somebody's going to announce a new shoe line for the year for the anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. And maybe just more like celebration of 40 years. I mean, I'm sure that there's probably some video packages being put together or something that are.
I think there'll be a lot more of online stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not expecting the big, like, Jason and Gil get out and announce everything like they did at Ectofest, whatever that was now, 3 years ago.
FanFest?
Yeah. Not FanFest, but Ectofest. The one that Ectofest. Was. Yeah.
Right.
It's so hard to conflate the two of them now because there was FanFest.
Yeah.
We got that coming. We got some DLC coming for Spirits Unleashed. That's going to be fun. Back in town, we got some issues coming out. So, yeah, there's plenty for us to talk about, and we will. We got to listen to that commentary. I'm sure there's something in there for us to talk about.
I think the final thought, if I had to put my own spin on it too, is maybe manage expectations. I think everybody sees this as like a big number that it's going to be big things, but it seems like every year, regardless, everybody just expresses disappointment that it wasn't, you know, fireworks and a world tour by Bill Murray, right?
Like, keep expectations.
You know, one thing we might hear more about is the Netflix series, perhaps.
Oh,
even just a little tease, just to keep our interests in. And you know what? Again, it doesn't matter how far the final thing is. Like, if it was coming out this year, we'd have heard. But you know, if whatever work has been done, tease a little, sort of like they did with the comic last year. Tease a little, because that's what they did for Ghostbusters Day last year.
Yeah,
tease a little bit of the art for the comic. Yeah.
Little something.
Tease a little of the concept art for the show.
Teases. I have a feeling we get some teases.
Teases.
Not even announcements, just sort of like, oh, hey, what's that? You know, like how Mondo just, oh, whoops, that thing wasn't supposed to be in our presentation.
Womp womp.
So stay tuned. We'll definitely be here to cover it. We'll check in and figure out what your temperature
we'll
is on Ghostbusters
party.
Table. Yeah, we'll have a good party on stuff. All right, so until the party happens either at my neighbor's house or here on the podcast, we'll see you on the other side. Who you gonna call?
We got her! Thanks for joining the Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossroad. Visit us at protoncharging.com, ghostbustershq.net, and stillplayingwithtoys.net.
That used to be one of my two favorite shows.
Anything you're doing is bad. I just want to let you know that.
Really found its voice in the 46th episode.
Oh. Next week, though, Careless Pets.
Gare and Venkman down by the firehouse. Firehouse works so much better.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.